revolutions we created. Black and brown rays of sunshine in time to find their parents'
cause. They were sharecropping Jim Crow laws. So Muslim cause witnessed the flaws of this union's constitution.
So they said, what the hell? Only time will tell. From fisted furious families marched and rebelled. They were locked up in cells so that they'll burn in hell. But the bodies never fell because they stood for revolution. Our revolution is revolution.
Re-evolution by Oz Williams, Jared Birdsong. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. This week, we will be talking about voices from the community with Manuel OG Man Compito, Coach Ron Crockett, Lynn Rossi, and the town crier, Don Garza. I also have a conversation with my co-host, Earlene Anthony, from the cast of Surviving the Nickel, which was performed yesterday, Sunday, September 30, 2012, at the Vortex. But first, I would like to start off with the forum I attended Friday, September the 28th, 2012, at the Downtown L.A. Exchange by Operation Facelift to address the trash problem that results from the feeding program in the Skid Row area. Before the forum started, I did an interview with Catherine McNinney of Operation Facelift. The interview is 1 minute and 40 seconds.
Yeah, this is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, host of the Qumran Report. And who am I speaking to here?
Catherine McNinney.
Okay. Oh, yeah, Catherine. Yeah, Catherine, can you tell us why you're here for this meeting and what's happening here tonight?
Yes, I moved into a loft on San Pedro Street about 2 years ago within Skid Row boundaries, and I immediately started to look around for who was doing good things in the neighborhood on the streets. And I was referred to OG by several people, and I met him, and I joined his crew, and I just, you know, started cleaning up with him. And I'm a huge fan, and I'm involved.
Okay. Yeah, he talk about you all the time. And tonight they're supposed to also discuss about the feeding program, the cleanup of the feeding program, the aspect of all of that. Can you comment on that? Your thoughts on that?
I've been enlightened by meeting the people that actually clean and feed and listening to OG. At first, when I first moved to the neighborhood, I thought, oh no, you know, this is causing too much trash. This has got to go. But then as I began to learn more about the people of Skid Row and the issues, I've changed my mind. I now believe that the people that come to feed are doing, you know, really great work, and they just need to be educated on our issues, that we don't have normal trash service like every other neighborhood. So we're trying to bring them into the organization and have them work with us. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much, Catherine. Enjoy the meeting. I know I am.
Is that okay?
Excellent.
Okay, that's Catherine McNinney from Operation Facelift. Now, I'm delighted to have with us in the studio some members of Operation Facelift, Manuel OG Man Compito, Coach Ron Crockett, head of the Fun Zone Reading Club, Lynn Rossi, she's a photographer, and also Don Garza, the town crier. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
First of all, could you tell us what is Operation Facelift?
At the last community forum, we wanted to stress something, because a lot of people just think Operation Facelift is a cleanup campaign. But you often hear us talk about Skid Row being holy ground. So we wanted to tie that in, because Operation Facelift is actually a spiritual movement with social implications. And it's very important to understand it. Those that's not spiritual are not going to understand it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's very important, because when you look at the efforts that's going to be required by the community and by people with good spirits to clean it up, you'll see that It's going to take more than big old tractors that the city bring out and these big machines. And, you know, it's going to take more. It's going to take, it's a spiritual movement. It's a caring movement. So that's basically what it is. You know, people come out there every week, every day, cleaning up. And it's more, and not for pay.
Mm-hmm. Now, how does a community member get involved with Operation Face if they want to get involved?
They contact Commander Ron Crockett.
Can you talk about that a little, Ron?
More than happy to. Welcome, world. It's very exciting to be here in Skid Row Studios here in downtown Los Angeles, where we're doing it live, giving up them daily reports. How are we going to get involved with Operation Facelift? 626-277-3457. Our Facebook is on Facebook, Operation Facelift Skid Row. Mm-hmm.
And so they just contact you. Can you touch just a little on, you don't have to get into any deep details, about what is the Operation Facelift procedure for cleaning up Skid Row?
Well, it's clear that Skid Row is a high-risk area. This is not an area that you come and take lightly. You have thousands of individuals that are homeless and suffering from traumatic mental disorder. So basically, we ask all volunteers to, you know, respect the homeless, treat them with respect. They're human beings. We also give you a quick 10-minute orientation demonstration on how to sweep from curb to from the sidewalk to the street curb. It's really enjoyable. The 2 hours that we spend each Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., it goes by so fast. All the volunteers are always saying, is it more to do, Coach?
Mm-hmm. So it's 2 hours that you do it every Saturday morning, 2 hours. You can touch on that again for us?
Correct. We meet up at the VOA Access Center located at 628 South San Julian Street, 90014. And, you know, it's a very quick orientation. And, you know, most of the volunteers, when they show up, they are amazed about all the homeless people that is located in the heartbeat of San Julian.
Mm-hmm. Now, look, for those that would like to donate or buy trash cans for Operation Facelift, what can you say then? What's the procedure for now?
Again, you still can contact Commander Ron, but also we partnership with the Volunteers of America on San Julian, which again is 628 South San Julian. You just call Candace Baker. Her phone number there is 213-624-4357. Or you can email her there at voasanjulian@gmail. And you can take some stuff and drop some stuff off. But we also ask, you know, maybe to call, you know, Commander around them, know what you're going to bring over there so we can keep a listing of what we got. Also, people that want to be involved in Skid Row, depending if you're a resident or somebody just from outside, because we're stressing down the tours. You know, we've been doing tours, but a lot of people have had that negative image of Skid Row. That's all they know. It either came through the city, the paper, or some of the local service providers. So we want you to come down, meet with us. We will walk you through Skid Row and let you look for it for yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, we ain't going to try to brainwash you or anything else. We're going to let you look at it, and then you can ask whatever questions you want to. And then we try to put you in, fit you in where you fit in. Mm-hmm. Not try to just get, we don't need just sweet cleaners. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the things that came out of the meeting. We need like an outreach team that's doing cleaning up. If you go out on the street to Skid Row, especially on 6th Street, you'll see a whole block clean. And it's cleaned every day by the people that live here. Mm-hmm. You can't clean up Skid Row just on no Saturday. So don't think that what you see down here on Skid Row, how good it's getting. That's not because of the Saturday cleanup. That's because the people have been armed with brooms and garbage cans that we've given them. That's why we need you to donate everything. This Saturday campaign is more so for people that's not from Skid Row, because you get a chance to meet the people. We use the brooms as a tool of communication. There's no way you can walk down the street and sweep effectively if you don't talk to the people. Because the object of Operation Facelift is to put the brooms in the hands of the people. Not for me to come out there and you to come out there every week. We'll be cleaning up there for 1,000 years. The object is to empower the people. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's why we come in But a lot of people that's not from Skid Row and got stereotype images of Skid Row, they're afraid of the people, or they're mentally ill, the drug activity, you know, all this kind of stuff. So your 2 or 3 days, if you come every Saturday, after 2 or 3 days or 2 or 3 Saturdays after, you get a chance to meet the people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by name.
Sort of like an orientation.
It's an orientation. Yeah, you get a chance to witness. Also, you get a chance to witness what the city is or is not doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because you come out there on Saturday, you see all that garbage. You know a fact that the city is not cleaning up, not holding up to the level it said it was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the purpose of the Saturday thing. If you don't know nothing about Skid Row, you want to kind of help out, and you want to learn more, then you can come out on Saturday, because most people work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you this here, we got doctors cleaning up Skid Row, lawyers, I mean, all kind of people, professional people coming out on Saturdays when they could be doing a lot of cleaning up Skid Row. So mm-hmm. it's an educational process for
now,
them.
Let me ask this, because, you know, one thing that I noticed about downtown in the Skid Row area, sometimes when we be working in the exchange and we have all of the garbage cans full of trash, and it's important to be able to get to these big trash bins to put those in there. What are the chances of Operation Facelift having some trash bins of their own situated throughout the Skid Row area?
Well, that's something that we'll take up with the city mm-hmm. after they get through their trial run.
Mm-hmm.
See, you're not going to get the city or the sanitation department to bring anything out until they're convinced that it need to be out. As you know, now trash cans are coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2008, the city, after 2008 campaign, after 8 months out there in 2009, they did give us a community trash bin.
A big
A big old bin, which is still housed down on where Sex Free used to be at.
Yeah, okay, on the 7th and St. Julian.
So to get a lot of them, you got to have a place for them to be. And you don't want them just sitting out on the street corner unless you're going to decorate them or something. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to beautify Skid Row. Mm. And that's the big option or obstacle between our different concept between the city and us. We want to make Skid Row comfortable. Why you think there's no benches on the street?
Mm-hmm.
Trash everywhere. We want to be able to sit down on the corner. No, the police don't want nobody to sit down. We want benches, you know. We want garbage cans. We want the normal things that will make life comfortable for us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to see people have to tear down their tent every day.
Mm-hmm.
That's mental stress. You want to tear your tent down, then you want to go find a job or go to the library, but you're scared to go anywhere, you know what I'm saying? And you see that every day, because go to the midnight miss, you see all the people in the courtyard, they're too scared to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You go over to the VOA, they're too scared to leave, they're going to lose their property.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make it uncomfortable. That's what the police department and the city want to do. We're going to make it uncomfortable for the homeless so they'll run up in the missions. That's never going to happen, ladies and gentlemen.
Let me turn to Lynn. We got Lynn Rossi in here also. Can you say a few words? Tell us how you got involved with the Operation of Facelift.
I met OG through Skid Row Photography Club and have been involved in the Skid Row community for a couple of years.
Tell us a little about what you do.
I build photography sets. I have a series called Evolution of the Revolution, mm-hmm. which takes moments in Black history and recreates them in photographs and portraits.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working on a series right now about that. I've done one about the Underground Railroad and one about Amistad and something about the Buffalo Soldiers.
Yes.
But it's a big ongoing project.
Mm-hmm. Are you able to do any photographs or anything in relationship to Operation Facelift?
I'd like to come down and actually start photographing. Down on that. I'd like to come down every Saturday and be a part of that and start really documenting that whole process. So I'm looking to be more involved with that.
Okay. Now, the next question I want to get off into, and I want to get our next guest involved with this because I know he's passionate about this. That's Don Goss of the town crier. So glad to have him in the studio here. But what I want to talk one thing that came up at the Friday's Forum. Can you talk a moment about the push for more healthy food that come into the Skid Row area from the mini feeding program? Can you want to pick up on that? And then I want to talk about that for a minute.
Maybe I'll just start with me. The stereotype about Skid Row is that everybody's mentally ill or a drug addict, but there are people who do suffer with physical ailments, And a lot of that has to come, has a lot to do with a lot of people want to put on drugs. But food can be a healing medication. And if you're only getting processed food, processed sugar, the wrong kind of food, which is stocked in all these local markets, there are people that are going to wind up with type 2 diabetes, what they call metabolic syndrome, you know, type 2 diabetes and pre-diabetes and obesity and things like that. I think it's very important that there is some sort of effort to bring in healthy foods to the Skid Row community. And I think OG is going to talk more about that, because I think that's actually the first time I'm hearing this. I walked in a little bit later in the meeting, and I guess this is the first time I'm hearing the push for the healthy foods. I know I talked with the gentleman from Food Not Bombs for a little while afterwards, and I'm trying to get with him, because it isn't just Skid Row. I mean, somehow we bifurcated Skid Row. We've said that the people on the east side of Main Street are in Skid Row, and the people that are living in the rehabilitated hotels on the west side of Main Street are no longer in Skid Row, and maybe we should forget about them. I think there is an even greater, if not more, need in those hotels, considering a lot of the people in those hotels are actually paying market rate for their hotel rooms, and the majority of the people in Skid Row are paying Section 8. So a lot of the people who are not on general relief are, you know, they're paying. They've got at least $600 left over for the month to be able to go out and buy whatever healthy foods or whatever they need to buy. But the people in the hotels on the west side of Main Street are left with maybe $200, $100 a month, no food stamps if you're on SSI in this state and SSDI and other things. And we need to break it down. And they're the ones that I think, for the most part, we need to focus on all aspects of the community. And I think that bifurcation of, well, this is a historic core, and we don't have any needy people in the community, as opposed to on the east side of Main Street, is a fallacy. I think we need to bring it together. I like the fact that Catherine McEnany has become a bridge, which was a prayer of mine for many years, between the people, the actual community members in Skid Row, and the actual people moving into the lofts. Because for the most part, the developers are trying to sell these lofts. And they're not going to sit there and say, hey, you know what, this is a loft in Skid Row. And Catherine McEnany is saying, oh, you know what, I'm within the boundaries of Central City East. I'm in Skid Row. I'm a part of this. Let's try to make this mixed-in community work. So I congratulate Catherine McEnany and the OG, and I'll just leave that OG continue with the process. But we need to get some healthy foods to the people all over the place.
Okay. OG?
I was talking about this, thinking about it today, because I passed the Hippie Kitchen. And I think that's, you know, that's one place where they kind of push healthy eating. But, and I'm one of the person, I got the worst diet in the world. I'm probably, you say you are what you eat, I'm probably like French fries and stuff, you know what I mean? So I want to encourage them, but the topic came up on the first community forum. And all during the week, it came up. I met a lady, we was at a black urban breakfast. And I met a lady, and she really broke it down so deep for me, because she talked about the DNA structure and how the body sustains itself on certain items. And when you start putting stuff in your body that's not supposed to be in your body, it's going to affect that. But she went so far also to talk about the frequencies, that your body has certain frequencies. And she went to that spiritual level again. We talked about Operation Facelift being a spiritual movement, that you can be out of tune with your higher power when your frequency is gone. You know, you got to eat healthy. So, you know, especially a person like me, maybe that's why I be kind of like be tripping sometimes. I'm on a bad frequency, you know. So I really believe that we, even though my diet is not what it is and I need to change, I think that we should encourage people to bring healthy food, bring the type of stuff that people need down there. Because when she really was, we got into the conversation, when you got that bad frequency, that can lead to domestic violence, all kind of other stuff, gang violence, all kind of other stuff started happening because your body's not in tune with stuff because you're not eating healthy.
Well, let me ask this question. Now, what are your thoughts on some kind of process of getting this information to the feeding programs that come down, that come down here?
Well, that's what we were talking about, our outreach. Outreach workers have been coming out on Saturdays, and then we got people in the community clean, but especially our outreach workers, they have been going through this kind of like an educational process. So we want to take them from sweeping, make them, you know, encourage them to get those brooms as quickly as possible into the hands of the people and to move to the people that come down and feed. Start passing out that information that Catherine is preparing and start having dialogues with them about that type of stuff. Because, they need, you know, they need healthy food, too, if that's what they're going to bring. But people need all kind of other kind of things, too. And we want to take the whole feeding people through process of education, too, because they need to learn who they're serving, what those people needs are, you know, that kind of stuff. Because I don't really eat off the streets that much no more because, you know, I got food poisoning once. It's not like, you know, it's all safe. What do you want to say about the run?
Well, I mean, I clearly have to say that, you know, more we can get healthy foods, the better. And quite naturally, it's an effort. And, you know, we have to coordinate it. And, you know, so that's really where we're at.
Mm-hmm. Can I interject here with
that? Go ahead.
One of the things I've also noticed between Ron and OG and others in the movement, the Operation Facelift and the spiritual movement that they have going on, the intrinsic wanting to, you know, help, you know, get out of this learned helplessness that was created over the past 35 some odd years about skid rows, helpless, hopeless, you can't help yourself. I'm telling you what, I mean, I got like about 3,000 people on my Facebook as friends, and I don't even know if they're, no, I basically know everybody on there. And I'll tell you what, I get a lot of stuff put on my wall by OG and Pastor Ron, and I don't think I'll ever want to take them off whenever they put them on there. And they're really doing a great effort on the social media end of the spectrum. I mean, OG even maintains his own website. Mm-hmm. I mean, this shows you for a gentleman, no offense, OG, of his age and his generation. I mean, he's putting that much of a intellectual effort into this spiritual program. That says a lot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's one is going to be the one of the key components there is the social media, making sure. I mean, eventually even having one of those little Operation Facelift app. You never know.
Okay. And then we got a Leilani. She just come into the studio.
Oh, wow, Leilani's here. Yeah. Hey.
She just came from the bowling.
Yeah, we're going to have her over here in a minute. But look, there's a couple of things that that came up in your conversation that I wanted to just pick up on, get some comments on. The first one, I want to ask the question, who developed the boundaries on what is Skid Row? Like you was talking about, it stops at Maine, and we know right across the street, you got the same thing happen. Who developed these boundaries? Can you touch on that? Who?
Well, it all starts with city planning maps, is from what my understanding was. And so the area, you know, the boundary for Skid Row, and then they have what they call buffer zones. So the boundaries for years for Skid Row was Main Street all the way to Central, and from 3rd Street all the way to 7th Street, which 4th Street would, of course, the boundary between is the buffer zone between Little Tokyo and Skid Row, and then, of course, Central being the buffer zone. Actually, even though it was the end, it's still a buffer zone between Alameda, I mean, the Arts District, and Skid Row. And then, of course, on the west side, you had your buffer zone, which was basically Spring Street and Broadway. So that way, because I remember when I first came down to L.A. and downtown Skid Row, and this was just 1999, on the west side of Broadway, you couldn't do basically anything that you could do on the east side of Broadway. Mm. So it was like, you know, people can shoot up, do whatever they wanted to on the east side of Broadway. But as the development came after the adaptive use ordinance of the city of Los Angeles, then the old bank district developed, which was 4th and Main, and then they decided to call it the historic core. We had a little conversation on the street last night about this. It's like, now it's Gallery Row, now it's the historic core. I call it Skid Row Heights because it's like, you know, we're up on a hill. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. And so what's going on is you've got people trying to sell real estate, trying to sell lofts, trying to sell the area. And I even said this on a downtown LA group on a Facebook, and I'll throw it out there. It's like, well, Starbucks is on 6th and Spring now.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, in the context, I mean, it's historic for downtown in the context that basically Skid Row now has a Starbucks.
Yeah.
Which, of course, other people, you know, are like, no. This is the historic core. This is the, you know, the financial district, you know, and or Indy area, Indy coffee area. Now it's the Indy coffee area. Mm. You know, okay. It just goes on and on. So it's just people making up, trying to sell. That's what they're trying to do.
Okay. But in addition to that, you have to go back to two things, the blue book and the containment. Mm-hmm. Those would set the boundary, the containment.
Concept of containment.
Mm-hmm. Concept of containment was, and before that was called the Blue Book. Mm-hmm. You know, when they wanted to just put everybody in one area and then put everything, you know, they came up with the, you know, the nice little phrase, mm-hmm. but that's where it came from. So again, you know, the map, you know, everybody want to know where the city's trash cans at and where our trash cans. So what came out of that form was creating a map to show exactly what the Skid Row boundaries are. Because at Art Walk, you know, Ron stayed around Main Street. And we'd be sitting there and just law people just be walking down and everything. They don't even really walking on Skid Row. So now you know through some other political maneuver, they want to move the boundary of Skid Row to Los Angeles. No, they're going to stay Main Street because that's where they're at. That's what it is. So it's going to be important for people to know that where they're at. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you could ask, go right on Spring, Broadway, and ask people where Skid Row at. You ever heard of them? They're going to tell you, yeah, where is it at? Somewhere. So, but you're walking down it every day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, let me ask this. There's something else that came up, and I just want to touch on this before we get back to our major subject of talking about this feeding program. Last week, we had Patty Berman in the studio, the head of the Downtown Neighborhood Council and a board member of the Arts Walk. And I asked about the possibility of creating a seat on the neighborhood council for policemen, so the police to give them, and I want to get your thoughts on that, because you just mentioned about, was it Captain McNinney?
No, that's Captain McNinney.
But anyway, the possibility of that creating a stronger understanding and a relationship on what's happening in this downtown area, because police, they are part of the community. Most people push them towards the business communities as protectors of the business community.
Which they are.
But technically, in the technical sense, as human beings, they still part of the community. And could I get some just little quick comments on that, and then we move back to our discussion?
Mm-hmm. Me personally. Mm-hmm. Just because you work in a community don't make you part of no community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got to have a commitment to a community. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some criteria that make you part of the community. You have to have some concern. If we're talking about now putting hood back in neighbor. You know, you got the hood. You took hood out of neighbor. You know, some people ain't got no good neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when you have a real community, your neighbor watches your house, watches your children. I came up, you couldn't do nothing around the corner. There's some criteria, like a wife. There's a criteria for that person to be your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you married to it doesn't necessarily make it your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, no. I'm not in favor of no police being on there. Who? If they live in Skid Row, I would go for that. Just because they roll around here, no, I ain't with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think there's
already a place for the police to be on the neighborhood council board. It's not a problem if they workforce and they work and as a stakeholder within the downtown boundaries, then they can run for a board seat. That's not a problem. Yeah. I mean, at first I was thinking, well, I mean, could it be a conflict of interest? But then, how many police officers do we have that are sitting on the city council right now, and some more are going to run again, or who knows if they're going to run anymore. So there isn't a problem with having them on there. The fact is that I think the police have always had a say in the community. I think they will always continue to have a say in the community. The business community backs them up. They just had a barbecue for them last Friday. The main thrust for the neighborhood council was to make sure that, and I was there at the beginning when we put it together, was to make sure that all the stakeholders in downtown Los Angeles had a voice. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that some of the so-called people that were for the business actually helped me when we suggested that we have a homeless seat, an actual homeless person sitting on the neighborhood council, an actual resident from Central City East community, because the idea is to put everybody in the same rooms. And of course, if you put everybody in the same rooms, and this was my big thing. If you put the people that are actually receiving the services in the same room with the people that are donating the money to the services with the service providers there, then there will be accountability. This is exactly what you're getting right now with the Operation Facelift. This is basically accountability. This is a community that was created. The fact of the matter is, Catherine McEnany accepted the responsibility and says, yes, Skid Row does exist, and yes, it is a community. Nobody wants to get rid of it. Containment is here. It's unspoken. Actually, it's being spoken of. It was in the Downtown News, I think, last month. Somebody finally said it. And then, of course, my detractors are always telling me that I had a tinfoil hat when I talked about it, are kind of like, oh, well, I guess your tinfoil hat doesn't exist now. The facts are that this community exists, and people are going to have to accept responsibility and say it's here, and what are we going to do about it? OG and others, the residents in the community now speaking for themselves. This was my dream come true.
Okay.
I just show up as like kind of break glass in case of emergency type of thing. But I'm very proud of these people and what they're doing. They're bridging everything. And now that I'm in the so-called historic core, maybe my goal or my job now is to make a bridge there to make sure that we continue with the mixed income community. But accept responsibility instead of living in an illusion.
Okay. Let me go to this last little point I want to discuss before we get into the interview, the last interview after the forum. I want to talk about one of the things that was discussed at the forum, and I thought it really made sense to me, and it was the concept of adopt a block or adopt a street that was mentioned, where an organization would adopt a street or a block and take the responsibility for keeping it clean. Can you comment on that?
Well, yes. It's one of them efforts that says, you know what, personally, let's organize, let's seek the resources to really put forth a quality effort to beautify that block top to bottom. I mean, we're talking about, you know, getting in, helping the seniors, you know, doing low cost to no cost moving, decluttering service. A lot of individuals got a lot of clutter, you know, and they can't afford to declutter. So it's a complete service that's adopting the block.
Okay. So what we were actually talking about is some of the community organization, religious organization, who would take responsibility for a street, keeping it clean, putting garbage cans there, coming out on a regular basis like that.
Well, I'm going to be meeting with the Downtown Clergy Council, so that's something we'll bring up. But like a lot of food ministries, they don't want to feed in the Midnight Mission or this mission. They don't want that. They want to stay on their particular street. So that's what we're trying to encourage them. So if they want to stay on this street, then they need to be putting trash cans on this street. They need to be networking with the people. And we're encouraging people now, just put your own organization on the trash can. Whatever street, matter of fact, that's one of the things about the tours. When you come to do a tour, then you can decide on what street you want to adopt. You want this street, you want San Junior Street, you want whatever, Gladys, whatever street you want, take that street, put the trash cans on that street. If you bring brooms down and drop them off, we'll make sure you get to the people on that street, you know, and then get that group of some to get involved with the people on that street. Which will get you involved with the total Skid Row community, because people move around all the time anyway.
All right. Now, at this time, I would like to play an interview I did after the forum by Operation Facelift. And I'm talking with Jane Torres, and the interview is 1 minute and 50 seconds.
First thing, hey, this is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, Drama Stage Qumran and the Qumran Report. And who am I here with?
It's Jane Torres from the Urban Garden Network.
And we just come out of a meeting, Operation Facelift, talking about the feeding and the cleaning and the health situation in Skid Row. Can you tell us why you are here?
Well, my friend Catherine McEnany invited me. I am presently active in Skid Row doing gardening and like that with the Skid Row Housing Trust, and I wanted to come see what this meeting is all about. I also do food gleaning, food recovery program, a volunteer with the Food Forward group from Farmers Markets. So the food thing is interesting to me. It was a very good meeting.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you one question. In the meeting, I heard them say something very interesting about the possibility of the Adopt the Block or Adopt the Street program. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's a great idea to get the broader community involved in helping keep the streets of Skid Row clean. There's issues with lack of trash cans. When people come in to feed the Skid Row residents, trash builds up, and it's a big mess. And cleaning is the next step to all this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Now, we have the radio show Monday night. You know, you'll be part of the radio show. We've been anxious to hear your voice. Thank you for taking the time. Tell us your name again in the organization.
I am Jane Torres with the Downtown Los Angeles Urban Garden Network.
Okay, thank you, Jane.
Thanks.
Great.
Yeah. I'm going to send you the link to Catherine. Had your email.
Yeah, I wrote it down.
Okay, let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we'll be joined by the one of the cast members from Surviving the Nickel, and we also continue our discussion of Operation Facelift. And we also be joined by a very good friend of mine, Lalani Sashe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's go into the community calendar.
This is a community calendar for the month of October. Every Tuesday from 5:30 to 8 p.m., the Veterans Community Theater Workshop is being held. The workshop is open to veterans and non-veterans. The location is the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard, and that's here in Los Angeles. It's near the corner of Santa Fe and Olympic, and the Metro bus number 60 and 66 stops right at or near the corner. For more information, you can contact 323-850-4436. Sunday, October the 14th at 3 p.m., the Veterans Community Theater Workshop will be performing the stage play, Surviving the Nickel. This play is written and directed by Melvin Ishmael Johnson. The location is The Exchange, 114 West 5th Street. That's here in Los Angeles. This is a free event. All are welcome to attend. Following the performance, there will be a Q&A session with a mixer, and light refreshments will be served. For more information on this event, you can contact 323-850-4436. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony. And our call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Hey, thank you, Miss Earlene Anthony. Now, we're back with our guest, Manuel O.J. Man Capito, Coach Ron Crockett, Don Garza, and also joining us, going to sit in for our roundtable discussion, Lilani Sashe. Mm. Thank you for joining in with us.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
And now we've been joined by one member of the cast of Surviving the Nickel that was performed at the Vortex Sunday, September 30, 2012, Miss Earlene Anthony. We're just going to touch on a few things about that. I just want to have a few questions. What are your thoughts about your role and the audience response to the play yesterday?
First of all, I want to thank all those people that came out to support us. We really had a nice crowd. It was hot and we were all in there sweating, but they came out and supported us anyway. I played Anita Sampson, and she's the parole officer in the play called Surviving the Nickel. And I enjoyed playing her because is opposite of my personality, who I really am. So I really got to be the meanie and the tough lady in this with the authority. And I wanted to play her because many times I'm sitting on the other side where I encounter people that's always going to tell you, no, you can't do this. And, you know, they put their foot down. And I wanted to kind of know what it was like to be on the other side dishing out the punishment.
Okay. Well,
I really enjoyed playing it.
Yeah.
It was great.
Now, how about, what are your thoughts about people getting out of prison and getting trapped in that Skid Row area? You have to play deal with that also.
I was, actually, Malik Morrison was the parolee just released from prison, who was an Iraqi military veteran, and he was really having a hard time coping with just coming out of prison, looking for a job, dealing with his girlfriend, and many other issues, housing. He just was running the gamut, and it was a surreal experience, real life, because military veterans come out and they do deal with this, and many of them do end up on Skid Row. And I was telling him the old pitch, don't end up on Skid Row. But unfortunately, many the veterans do end up on Skid Row.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, let's get back to our main topic that we was talking about, Operation Facelift, the feeding program. And I would like to, what we want to talk about is some thoughts on the problems and the solution. And one thing I like to bring up to discuss, and I want Sashay to chime in on it also, is how do you deal with the mental ill issue of some of the community members who, because of their mental problems, will litter and trash the area? So how you deal with the situation?
That's a tough one. But because people that got mentally ill diagnosis or whatever, I mean, I'm not no professional. I'm not no psychiatrist, you know. We just knock them out. No, but, no, but you got to be compassionate. One thing I've learned, yes, you know, being yes down here, man, is that when it comes to the mentally ill, and I guess maybe we all may have one of those problems, you got to be understanding and you got to be compassionate.
Mm.
You know, you got to have an extreme level of compassion. And that's what really bothers me, because when you leave here, you know, 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night, you're going to start seeing those sleeping on the sidewalk, I mean, without no blankets, I mean, in the deficit and urine. And it really bothers me that the mental health department and the workers are not out at night looking for them. Mm-hmm. It bothers me that during the day they sit in their comfortable office waiting on them to come in and tell them. Because, see, with, you know, I've had these discussions with them, and the only way they can help you or come to help you, you either got to say you're going to kill yourself or kill somebody else. Mm. Then they'll come. But all communication, when I talk to them, is not verbal. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's body language, signs. If somebody's laying in the ground, you know, in pee and urine, mm, you know, in cold at night, they're killing themselves. They shouldn't have to be waving no flag.
Yeah.
If you're standing in front of a bus, butt naked, mm, I think you got a problem. You know, so we're gonna be talking to the mental health, but we want to launch a program called 72. Mm-hmm. You know, because when they do come get you, they can keep you for 72 hours.
Because mm-hmm most of the mentally ill, a lot of them is off of their medication.
They off their medication, so mm-hmm if you come get them and you hold them for 72, then you can get them back on their medication. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if you let them out one day; you got to come get them again. Come get them, because that's one of the main reasons that they're doing what they're doing. They're off their medication. Okay. And so what's happening is, if you see a mentally ill person knock a window in and go inside the building, they get arrested for burglary, because the mm-hmm police are not equipped to know if they're mentally ill or if they're a burglar. Mm-hmm. You know, so now the mentally ill people getting, you see them when he got shot, you know, they had a knife, you know, you didn't even taser the woman, you just shot her down, you know, mm-hmm that kind of stuff. So
okay.
Can I interject here for a second here? I was down there long enough to realize that there's certain populations, and they call them certain things. There's people that are dually diagnosed that have a mental illness and are also addicted to drugs or could be just self-medicating. There's those that are just mentally ill. There are those that have even a triple diagnosis that could be have a physical ailment, a mental illness, and be addicted to drugs. Mm-hmm. And I think when I was down there long enough, I was long enough to see that between the first and about the maybe the seventh of the month, there were more mentally ill people walking the streets of Skid Row. And of course, I have to attribute that to people using whatever drug of choice that they're using, so they would display the symptoms of mental illness. And then, what are they going to do? Put them in a what? I don't know what you would call it, to go and get help for being mentally ill. When they come down off of a drug, they're not mentally ill, so you can't throw them into a psych ward somewhere.
So it's a paradox.
So it's a very big mm-hmm. paradox down there, and I personally agree with OG, and this has been the biggest thing for the past 12 years since I've been down there in Skid Row. Homelessness is a 24-hour thing. It's not 9 to 5 like mm-hmm. they try to make it be. There's something inherently wrong when we are not expeditiously doing our fastest to get people off of the street and out of the cycle of homelessness. You've got people that wind up in Skid Row because that's where their services are at. Number one, that weren't physically ill, that weren't on drugs or alcohol. They can't get in any programs. Next thing you know, they're in the cycle of being physically ill, mentally ill, and then addicted to drugs. And then now they're in this cycle, and now they've been labeled. And what do? You just throw them in an SRO. No offense, nice to have them SROs. But where are the rehabilitation programs once you get people into the SROs? I mean, I was sick, and I didn't use drugs, and I lived in an SRO. And I was praying to God, when are they going to give me some sort of vocational rehabilitation in my housing so I can find a job? Thank God for the internet and YouTube. I learned how to build websites on my own. Mm-hmm. So this is the issue. It's 24 hours, not 9 to 5. And if we somehow can get OG's message out there, and I know Leilani wants to interject, let's hear what Leilani has to say.
Leilani?
Okay, the question was, how do you reiterate to those who are already mentally ill to put trash in a trash can? Okay, my first definition is mental illness, mental challenge, disease is without ease. So many of us have been not diagnosed. So many of us may be mentally ill without being diagnosed. Yeah. And it's such a stigma attached to that. It's just like teaching. In order to teach someone, it's like repeat. You just continue to repeat. You recognize a person, look at them in their eyes, and you explain to them, you know, this is our community, this is our home, put trash where it belongs. Many people respond to that. But if you're having a bad day, you know, it's okay. You might have Ron, or you may have OG or somebody out there to, you know, if you throw some trash on the floor today or the ground today, we'll pick it up for you. But it's not a constant here. We don't have the stigma that we have down here, and I think it's such a degradation that we don't take care of our communities. If there are trash cans there, we will put trash in the can. We've found people. I think we set out one day, OG, and we've seen the people who are severely mentally ill put trash in a trash can because that's the way they've been reared. That's the way they've been brought up. You know, nobody really just takes something that they've utilized and just throw it on the ground mm-hmm. as if it's nothing. But a lot of times you have people that come here to get to exploit this open, what I call a sane asylum. Since Reaganomics, mm-hmm. you know, came in effect, and then we have the two Bushes here, God forgive me, whatever. But this place has been a dumping site for those who are severely mentally challenged.
Well, let me ask you this, and because you know a lot about what's happening also in this Skid Row area. What are your thoughts on the feeding program, the trash mm-hmm. that comes from the feeding program, and a possible solutions?
Solution is if you're just an active organization, a church or whatever have you, bring trash bags, bring trash cans. I mean, nobody wants to mm-hmm. see a place where you're going to be giving food out, and then afterwards, when you all leave, this place looks like a nuclear holocaust.
Let me say this, because see, I know a lot of the organizations that come down and bring down food, et cetera, like that. Mm-hmm. And I know that most of these organizations, they bring trash bags, they clean up. But the problem seemed to be the individual that leave the area with food and containers and stuff like mm-hmm. that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, they need to take them out of here. I mean, this is not there. If you see, there's no open dump sites. There's no open trash cans here. We don't have the capacity to fill that. First of all, you have the stigma of America seeing us as trash. Skid Row is not even on the map. Okay, you know what I mean? So if you're going to come down here and feed, remove the debris with you. It's just that simple.
Mm-hmm, but
I agree with that because, see, I hear that all the time. That's an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
You bring a trash bag. So what? The trash go around the corner. Did that relieve you of your responsibility? Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to follow the man around the corner and pick up his trash, I could go for that. Mm-hmm. Just because you bought a trash bag and you know that you feeding people who are going around the corner, common sense tell you to bring some garbage cans that we could put around the corner.
Yeah.
Then I could see you, you know. But no, just because you bought a trash bag,
that's not
so what?
The problem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what? If you bring a garbage can and don't leave it, it don't mean nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If you bring a broom and don't leave it, that's like me coming in your house as a maid, cleaning up your bathroom, and then taking all the supplies with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now how do we get these? How do we get this message to these feeding programs?
Go ahead. Doing.
No, I'm talking about. Okay, this is one method that we're talking to right here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking about how do you develop a methodology that they understand that this problem is more deeper than just bringing out a little trash.
Which is, you know, clearly my method would be create an ordinance, stop feeding. And it's like, you know, and that's a message I have been putting out to clergy and to the general public. I mean, you know, somehow, some way, we must get their attention.
But that got shot down by a large amount. Didn't it?
No.
I don't agree with that.
Go ahead.
I don't agree with create an ordinance to stop feeding. People, you know, when you know, I know they say that we get well fed down here on Skid Row, but it's just having people come from the outside and come having that human contact, to have that compassion, that humanitarian concept, for someone to look at my eye and see me and recognize me. That might be more than I need. You know what I'm saying? But the problem is that people look as people on Skid Row as dehumanized. They're not human. And so you need to come down here and see, you know, that this could be you. I'm here because of financial deprivation.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. Now, we're winding down, and I just want to let you know that hopefully within the next 2 weeks, the next two shows, maybe the next show, I can get a commitment to get Lelani in here so we can do the whole show.
Yeah.
It's like your house. Well, you know, if you're going to give your house clean, you know?
We've been promising that. But what I want to do now.
A whole show?
Yeah, a whole show.
We've been trying to.
Whole show, yes.
Whole show. But I want to, let's take about 30 seconds, get some closing comments, go around so we can wind down.
I think the most important thing is exactly what Leilani has said, and we've both been there for a long time. Mm-hmm. I was there for 10 years living in Skid Row. Now, of course, I live in Skid Row Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is that people come down there, and they, like you said, they see us as dehumanized, not human beings. They feed us like they feed the people like dogs.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do it. They respectfully bring donuts and say they're doing good works. And when they're basically making people sick, bring in the raw foods. I think Leilani should be back on. I think she speaks very succinctly about this. Compassion is not about you know, feeding people sugar constantly so that they become wild animals.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, Ron.
Well, once again, you know, issues and solutions. General Jeff, shout out. I mean, you know, we know the issues. I mean, you know, and creatively, we want to come up with the solutions. Once a month, we're having community forums. We're having mixers. We're reaching out to Orange County, Long Beach, Watts, South Central. These churches, these clergies, these do-gooders, they come from all over the country and decimate and litter the community. So it's going to take, you know, a strong team to outreach.
Okay. Old team?
Just go to www.facebook.com, go to Operation Facelift, stay in contact with us. Like Coach Ron said, get involved with the community forum. I believe we're just going to start, keep on working together. We're going to keep working. It's like any kind of education process. Some people catch on quicker than others.
Okay. Leilani?
Well, I just say that education is empowerment, so we just have to continue to reiterate. If you want to come down here and feed, make sure you clean and bring the proper things to take the debris out of here. I mean, you wouldn't want it in your home, so we don't want it here.
Amen. Okay.
Amen.
You know, I'm down.
Lynn?
Lynn,
what do you got?
Come on, Lynn.
I just say I look forward to being more a part of the whole Operation Facelift.
Okay. Earlene?
Everyone is saying, education, because people want to help the homeless. They don't know how to help the homeless. That includes feeding and all the other stuff. So education.
Okay, I would like to extend a special thanks to Manuel OG Man Computo, Coach Ron Crockett, Don Garza, Lynn Rossi, and Lee Lanti, and my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Please check out our past shows of the Qumran Reports on iTunes, Facebook, skidrow.la, Twitter, and dramastage-qumran.org. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report, and from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. And I leave you with the song that opened the show, Re-Evolution, by the group Oz Williams.
Peace.
Rebelled, they were locked up in cells so that they'll burn in hell. But the fires never will because they stood for revolution.